Josh Bell hates everything.
That's right, including your movie.
Josh Bell hates everything.
Except me.
Hello and welcome to the Josh Bell Hates Everything podcast. I'm Josh Bell, film editor for Las Vegas Weekly. And joining me this week is Tony Macklin, film historian and critic and author of the book Voices from the Set, online at tonymacklin.net. Thank you for being here, Tony.
I will let your listeners know what true hatred is. Josh hates everything.
But Tony, Tony is going to be the king of hate today. He's come loaded for bear. I see he's got a folder full of material to discuss today. So we'll get right to it. The topic today is Terrence Malick, and in particular, Terrence Malick's new film, The Tree of Life, which opens in Las Vegas this week. It won the Palme d'Or, the top prize at the Cannes Film Festival last month. It's been playing in a few other cities for a few weeks. It's gotten overwhelmingly positive reviews, but Tony is not going to be one of those people.
Well, why don't you give your opinion?
My opinion. It's strangely enough, this seems like very much a love-hate film. Like I said, it's gotten overwhelmingly positive reviews, but the negative reviews have been very, very, very negative, which we will hear soon enough, I think. But for me, I'm actually kind of in the middle. I didn't hate this movie. I can understand the point of view of being very frustrated with what Malick does in this movie, because it's certainly abstract and experimental and not a traditional narrative in any way. And I think it is extremely self-indulgent.
In a boring way.
In a boring,
tedious way.
I thought it was not entirely boring.
Pretentious way and pompous way.
Pompous, I will agree with you on. I didn't find, and boring at times. But at the same time, I think, first of all, Malick has so much invested in this movie. It's obviously very, very personal, and that I think can make it
pompous.
That's
like saying Newt Gingrich has a lot invested in his candidacy. It means absolutely nothing.
Well, but
the
candidacy isn't a piece. I mean, this is art, and I think
no, it's quasi art.
I think to me, something that's important, something that I value in watching a movie, is when the people who've made it have passion about what they're doing. I mean, you can watch a million soulless Hollywood blockbusters where clearly nobody cared about anything.
You mean like Snooki?
Like
Snooki has packed on Jersey Shore.
You're comparing Terrence Malick to Snooki.
Hey, this is a culture where Snooki was at one point 24th on the best fiction list.
Yeah,
the New
okay,
York Times.
All right. I don't think Terrence Malick is going to achieve anywhere near the level of success of Snooki.
What was number one in nonfiction? A nonfiction, quote, true story about a four-year-old who had a near-death experience and sat on the knee of Jesus.
I think
there
this is
a
little off
heaven.
Topic.
No, it's our culture. It's what our culture.
Are you honestly grouping Terrence Malick in with Snooki and the exploitation book about the four-year-old who thinks he went to heaven?
No, but I am saying our culture does not have many demands. It accepts superficiality.
And I think this movie is the opposite of that. I think this movie is possibly too demanding in that Malick isn't giving his audience enough to understand what he's trying to do.
Okay, my problem is, Josh, and this is maybe where
yes,
we differ.
All right.
I understood it.
You feel like you understood it?
No,
yes.
I don't feel like
okay.
I understood it.
All right, well then explain it.
Under,
all right,
I did
all right.
Understand
Let's
it.
Hear it.
By the way, I don't hate this film.
Okay.
My original review was posted on Rotten Tomatoes early.
Yeah.
And I got 48 comments. Now, I don't read the comments unless somebody sends me something personal,
yeah,
and then I always respond.
Probably
to
better
it.
For your sanity not to read those comments.
Well, my webmaster
yeah,
wonderfully told me that of the 48, 46 think you're a dickhead.
Right.
And of course, most of these people hadn't seen it.
Right, and that's the culture of the internet and of Rotten Tomatoes, where people make these snap judgments, and everything has to be either brilliant or horrible, and that's unfortunate.
In all of Malick's films, he brings in the concept of love. And in this, he has the mother say, the only way to be happy is to love. Oh, boy, that's good.
So are you against love?
Unless you love, your life will flash by. So my feeling is that The Tree of Life is a film about love for people who hate. Of the 48 that I got, 46.
Yeah, I mean,
so really,
I,
really,
I, I think it's unfair to Malick to judge his movie or to judge him on those idiot commenters who post on Rotten Tomatoes.
That is absolutely true.
And I mean, and I don't disagree that those people are idiots and not worth your time, and you were smart to ignore and not read them.
I just do not think that the ordinary is sublime.
But it can be. Can it not be in the hands of someone who knows how to craft it, how to approach it in a way that brings out the beauty in it?
But how can you leave out the humanity?
I mean, I don't think he does leave out the humanity in this movie.
Grass and trees and twigs are much, 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 much more important than humanity.
I mean, that may be true, but I think at the same time, there's a lot of... I mean, this movie is in part, at least, inspired by Malick's childhood. Yes. And I can imagine the way that the mother is
growing
portrayed,
up in Texas.
Right, in Texas, in Waco, Texas. It takes place mostly in the 1950s. And the way that the mother is portrayed, played by Jessica Chastain in this movie.
Who's very good,
by the
way.
Very good. And there's so much love in that portrayal. And there's a great deal of humanity, I think.
She is a symbol of love.
She is a symbol.
Symbol.
But the symbol grows out of the real, honest love that Malick must have for his mother, which I think is a genuine human. I mean, you're right that Malick is very much about love in all of his movies, not just this, but in his other movies as well. And I think he's a very emotional filmmaker.
But how can you be about love and leave out humanity?
I mean, I just don't think. And furthermore, I think you can love nature. You can love beauty. You can love art. There's a lot of different kinds of love. And love for human beings is something that I think is very much present in Malick's movies, but it's not the only thing that there is.
If he had to pick between a tree and a human being, he would go with the tree every time.
That may be true.
I have an interesting – it was an interview in New York Magazine with Christopher Plummer,
uh-huh.
who's a wonderful actor.
Yes.
And it was in the film that was your favorite film a couple of years ago. He played the sea captain in New World.
Right.
And he said he's fascinated. He's talking about Malick now.
Mm-hmm.
This is in New York Magazine.
Yeah.
He's fascinated by nature and just cuts to birds. Colin Farrell kept saying, my character, he's a fucking osprey, which is a word, which is a bird.
A bird, yeah.
That's how he sees me. You'd be playing a passionate scene, and he'd say in that strange southern voice of his, this is Malick,
yeah.
mixed with Harvard and Oxford, oh, just a minute, Chris Plummer. I think there's an osprey flying over there. Do you mind if I take just a few shots? I wrote him an infuriated letter because I saw the film late and I was hardly in it. Says,
yeah.
Says
well,
Pama.
I mean, but I think I understand his frustration, especially as an actor. I imagine it must be really frustrating to put so much of yourself into a character or to spend all this time playing a part and to realize that you don't end up in the movie. I mean, that in The Thin Red Line, that happened to numerous actors.
Adrian Brody.
Right. And others, I think, well-known actors who didn't end up in that movie in favor of other actors who did end up in the movie.
But the scene that worked best for me was the human condition, the human anger and frustration of them sitting at the table.
Right.
That scene erupts.
Right, right.
That scene is galvanic.
Yeah.
And I go back to my favorite Malick film, Badlands, where the characters weren't just symbols, there was real human conflict, and it really focused on the human condition.
Yeah. No, I mean, I agree with you in that I prefer his other movies, and I think this movie is too abstracted to really connect on that emotional level that I think he really wants to connect to. I think he really feels something very strongly that he's trying to get across with this movie, and it doesn't succeed.
I don't question that, but indulgence is indulgence. Now, when Sam Peckinpah is being self-indulgent, I think it goes somewhere.
Yeah.
When Robert Altman was being self-indulgent, it went somewhere. When Malick is being self-indulgent, it stops at the tree.
I think it goes a little further than that.
Another thing about the criticism. The critic, I was stunned when I read the initial critics because I had made fun of it in my review. Tony Macklin,
right.
TONYMACKLIN.net, when I had reviewed the film and got this reaction, and I kept seeing positive review. It was 80-some percent
yeah,
positive.
Yeah, it's been
and
mostly
then the
positive.
People, and I said, the people are going to see this and they're going to be bored. It's a home movie, and yet the audience reaction, I think it's in the 60s. So I was about ready. I was on the brink, critical world, of withdrawing from criticism.
Just because, I mean, isn't the point of criticism, though, that we have different opinions and that we can debate them as we are doing right now?
But I thought I had lost my mind. I had thought I had lost my critical acumen.
Yeah.
Two critics.
Uh-huh.
So I read Kenneth Turin, who I think is my favorite critic in the L.A. Times.
Right.
I may not agree with him, but as you say, his opinion seems valid, and even though I may not agree...
And it was a positive review of the movie?
It was mixed, and Rotten Tomatoes had it negative.
Yeah.
It was mixed. He said something about it demands to be admired, but cannot easily be embraced.
And I agree with that. I definitely felt that way. I really admire... I mean, I think there are some amazingly beautiful images in this movie. things that just... The shot of Jessica Chastain floating next to the tree is just... It's just stunning. I mean, and there's some parts of this movie that you feel like... It struck me almost like a video installation that you would see in an art museum. And that's not something that most people are going to a movie theater to see, but that's still something that I can respect and admire. And the way that this movie go ahead.
No, do you know the poetry of William Carlos Williams?
Not well.
His famous poem is, "So much depends on a red wagon glazed with rain beside the white chickens." And that's what I think he is, too. Images, images, images.
But I mean, it's a visual medium. The images are very important.
It's a visual medium, but it's about the human condition. The other thing I wanted to talk about, the second critic.
Please,
go ahead. David Elliott is my favorite critic of all time. He used to write for the San Diego Union Tribune before they fell on bad times. He's now writing, and if you ever want to read an interesting review, because he's literate and he has a context and he has experience and he's a humanist, David Elliott now writes for the San Diego Register or
San Is it the Diego? Reader? The
San Diego
All-Weekly?
Reader. Yeah. Thank you. Yeah. Thank you. San Diego Reader. And he was raised in Texas.
Mm-hmm.
And we had a big argument when Open Range came out. He loved it. And I thought when the stars said, I want 1,000 kisses. I needed my barf bag, my critical barf bag.
I liked that movie, I can't remember any details about it now, but I liked it at the time.
So I wrote to David, and I didn't know where he was now, and I found out that he was on the San Diego Reader, and read his review, and he really disliked it. Mm-hmm. He really thought it was pompous. And I just want to quote one line, and then I'm pretty much caught up on my...
Really? Okay. All of the vitriol we've actually gotten through.
There hasn't been any vitriol. If you think that
you're warning me beforehand about what this flood that is about to come.
I knew that I was going against the avalanche of trees that were going to fall.
Yeah, that's all right.
David wrote, uh-huh. It must be, Tree of Life, it must be the most pompous movie made in Texas since Giant. But that saga was entertainingly excessive.
Yeah.
This one isn't.
Right. I mean, I think I agree that it's pompous, but I think that's sort of like, that's the only way that he can get all of this stuff out that he wants to say. This was originally a screenplay that he was working on 20-something years ago, and I think you get the impression from this movie that this is something that's bottled up inside this guy for all this time that he's finally able to let out. And in a very... undisciplined way in a lot of senses, and I think just this sort of explosion of emotion and ideas that has trouble reaching the audience.
You mean he's the Anthony Weiner of film?
No, I mean I think you can put it in a disparaging way, but I think I really do respect the personal expression that's going on here, and I think it doesn't succeed a lot of the time. But I would much rather see this movie than some summer blockbuster, than the Pirates of the Caribbean movie, which was maybe more entertaining at times, but clearly had no passion or interest in it at all.
Okay.
So that's okay.
I mean,
all right.
Almost everybody is making the case, and I thought the audience would turn against it.
Yeah. Well, it's going to be a very specific audience. This is not going to reach a general audience. Whether we loved it or hated it, there's no way I think we can agree that it's going to be a big populist film.
I think the way I always try to judge a film is, does it achieve what it sets out to do?
Right.
And I know he's passionate. I know he's committed. I know he's got a beautiful visual sense. But I don't, if this is a film about wonder, if this is a film, I don't think there's any wonder in it. Yeah. I think it's like somebody going down and making a home movie of watching a leaf float in the water.
I mean, and that can be beautiful too. I mean, there's experimental films like that look like home movies of a leaf floating in the water. But if you catch a moment in the right way, it can be equally beautiful.
See Jesus in the leaf, or
it doesn't have to involve Jesus or religion. It just can just involve the specific beauty of the thing that you actually see. I mean, and I agree with you that he doesn't succeed at what he's trying to do. I think at times he succeeds. There are moments that the movie connects. Overall, it doesn't succeed. But what he's trying to do, I think, is admirable.
I think there's a universality in the film and in sneaking into somebody's house. I'm not saying I ever did this. and finding the woman's underwear.
Yeah.
The young guy does
right.
this. There's a kind of universal quality in that. But most of the activity of the child, you wonder how he grew up to be a filmmaker.
Yeah.
I mean, you wonder how. And of course, as an adult, this is played by
Sean Penn, Sean right? Penn. Which, and who has me, a much smaller part than you would imagine.
For me, Sean Penn is like Bette Davis. I understand why people like that particular actor. I can't.
Because I mean, I feel like
myself.
Sean Penn, there's barely any Sean Penn-ness in this movie. I mean, he's in it so little, and what he does is very slight that his presence or non-presence, I feel like, didn't almost make a difference.
I think he said, what actor can I find whose mere image suggests pretension?
Oh, man.
And there was Sean.
There was. All right, well, so let's move on a little bit and talk about some other Malick movies, because I think my sense is, despite your dissatisfaction with The Tree of Life, that you do respect Malick as a filmmaker,
absolutely.
And you like other things that he's done.
He's not this was not Aronofsky's The Fountain.
Which it resembles in a lot of ways.
But don't you think that was a film that failed?
The Fountain?
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, again, I admire the ambition behind The Fountain, and there's some beautiful images to it. I probably like The Tree of Life more.
Are you seen in film yourself? I admire ambition, and I have a lot of ambition.
No, I have much less ambition than these guys. I think that's why I admire it, because I look at it and I think, like, I could never do anything like that. I am completely blown away by the what they bring to it. So, no, but it does. I think it does resemble The Fountain in a lot of ways, and I liked it more than The Fountain, but I think they similarly have that sense of the filmmaker just bursting with ideas and emotions.
One more film.
Yeah.
A film that I do think had wonder in it. Kubrick's 2001.
Yeah, and it definitely resembles that as well.
But I thought that's a work of art, and this is a work of attempting.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not actually a big fan of 2001 or Kubrick in general, but it definitely, I can see those connections. I think they're both works of art. I do. So going back to the beginning of Malick's career, we mentioned briefly Badlands, which is his first movie. And I think you can see, even then, the seeds of what we would end up seeing in Tree of Life. It's not a complete disconnect.
I think there are many more themes in Badlands.
Yeah.
First, Martin Sheen, his son could have played it.
Yeah.
Charlie could have played it real well. It was based on Charlie Starkweather.
Yeah.
And Carol Fugit, I think, was her name.
Yeah, I think that's right.
Who were murderers.
Right.
And it was a film that was interesting character, but it also related to the culture's interest, focus on evil or killing or something that was the dark side. That was part of it, and part of why I liked it. In fact, I can think of more images come to mind from that film than come to mind from Tree of Life.
Yeah.
That I think the image of them dancing at night with the in front of the car lights, of him killing the guy in the cellar or in the outside
right.
cellar, whatever,
right,
whatever
right.
it's called, the in the house, the threat, the sense of, I think there is a depth to that there simply that he wasn't able to sustain, or maybe wasn't interested in sustaining.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's part of it is that, I mean, and this applies not only to Badlands, but I think to all of the movies that he made before Tree of Life, is that there's a grounding in something real, and not just a plot, but, I mean, in the case of Badlands, obviously it is based on real events, and the same goes for Thin Red Line and The New World, all of which are based on historical or true accounts, that no matter how far off into the stratosphere he wants to go and how abstract he wants to get with his shots of nature, that eventually he comes back around to these people did these things and here's what happened. And I think that balance is much more effective in those earlier movies, certainly.
It's an interesting thing. I don't know whether you think of this, but I wonder if a new film, if the first time, if I had seen Antonioni's La Ventura when it first came out,
yeah,
whether I would have said, I hope I wouldn't have, that this is tedious, nothing happens. And I always think of that when I see something like Tree of Life.
Right.
Am I 10 years later going to say, wow, this was
and it's entirely possible. I mean, that happens. I'm sure when 2001 came out, there were lots of people who thought, what the heck is this? What is he doing? This is ridiculous. And now, of course, it's thought of as a masterpiece. And I mean, I'm not saying that will or will not happen here, but
I
think it's possible.
I don't think it's possible at all.
All right.
But I could be wrong.
Yeah.
But
yeah. I mean, already, obviously, there's a large number of people who are at that point who are saying it's a masterpiece. But will other people come around?
These are people that say it's an instant classic. It's the best movie I've seen today. They have no context. They wouldn't.
I mean, I don't think that's true. I think there are a lot of very intelligent people who I respect who are saying that this movie is great. I mean, I may not agree, but I think that they are legitimately taken with it. I don't think it's a false thing.
Okay.
But it was interesting to me. The one Malick movie that I hadn't seen before seeing Tree of Life was Days of Heaven, and I went back and watched it about a week or two ago before in preparation for today. And I thought it was excellent. I really, really, really liked it. But I think, again, what struck me about that, it was far more similar to Tree of Life than I had anticipated that it would be. And I think, you know, that evolution of his approach has been organic, I guess you could say. I mean, it's moved from place to place, but I mean, there's a lot of stuff in Days of Heaven where there are scenes that aren't really scenes or things that are just kind of threaded together by this voiceover or lots and lots of nature shots and things like that. And I think it connects that stuff with the emotional story in that movie in a way that Tree of Life doesn't.
It's been connected to Henry James's novel Wings of the Dove, and you know probably Henry James is not a writer who has explosions.
No, certainly not.
In his work. The thing that remains for Days of Heaven, if visual can be eloquent, I think it was much, much more lyrical than Tree of Life.
Yeah, it is. It is. And I think part of that is you have a better understanding of who the people are and why they feel the way that they do. And then when you get to the point where you have these sort of symbols, the nature symbols, or you have the voiceover or whatever, it all contributes to the full understanding.
That's another thing about Malick. He has voiceover that usually is really negligible. Believe in love. Shut up. Job, this is Job talking. Oh, shut up.
I mean, I think the voiceover is I mean, I don't think you can like a Malick movie without appreciating the voiceover. I mean, it's such an integral part of what he does. And in Badlands, I think it's been a while since I saw it, but Sissy Spacek is the narrator, and there's that disconnect between her sort of like weird teenage love concept of what's going on versus the stark violence of what's really happening, and that creates another layer to it. And in Days of Heaven, you have the young Linda Ganz, I think is the actress's name, who has this very ineloquent way of speaking and this kind of grating accent in a way, but her sort of simplistic view of what's happening really informs what you're seeing. It adds something to the story.
Okay, leap ahead to Tree of Life in the narration. Did you think it added anything there?
I mean, I think it was of a piece with what he was trying to do, where a lot of the – in the other movies, the narration is at least – superficially related to the plot and commenting on the action. Whereas Tree of Life, it's all a meditation on the meaning of love, the meaning of life, and all that kind of stuff. And the voiceover goes along with it.
I believe more than most people in the importance of the word in film.
Yeah.
One thing that I've realized fairly recently is how good the film scripts of Hitchcock's films were.
Yeah.
I mean, I always knew they were important, but they're well written. There's depth. There's irony. They're cunning. There's when I hear the words from this when she's
but I don't think Malick is going for irony or cleverness or anything. I mean, that's it's like reading a diary in a lot of ways. I mean, and that can be really irritating, but I think that's what he's going for, is this true, raw, emotional reveal.
I think you've said exactly what separates me and you, is that I'm an ironist.
Yeah. Well, I am too. I love that kind of stuff.
But you accept I needed irony. I needed at this, and it screams, the tree screams of irony.
Yeah.
And he's just in love with Bart.
Right. You need distance, and I think that's the thing about Malick, is that he has no distance from this material. He is absolutely 100% right there.
Well, I like right there. I am emotional. I would say that I'm more a romantic. I mean, I am a failed idealist, so I'm a cynic.
Yeah.
But I would say I'm more romantic than most. I hide it. Maybe you have never seen it.
I guess not.
But, you know, you put a doggy on the screen, and I'm almost in tears.
All right. That's fair. And, I mean, so this movie didn't – I think that goes back to, like, did it achieve what it was trying to achieve? And I think it's trying to achieve that emotional connection, and it didn't. So we're getting down to the wire here, but I do want to quickly mention my favorite Malick movie, which is The New World, which I did have as my favorite movie of 2005 when it came out. And I think, to me, that is, despite what Christopher Plummer says, and he's not wrong about there being a lot of nature shots in that movie, but I think that is the pinnacle of Malick's sort of overbubbling emotion connecting with a real story that is about not only about true events, but about people that we can understand, and that it gives such a different and unexpected perspective on a story that I think a lot of people are really familiar with, the whole Pocahontas, John Smith, the Pilgrims and the Indians, all that stuff. And you have a real, like, preconceived sense of what a movie about that should be like, and it's nothing like that.
I'm speechless. No, I don't disagree. For me, that film worked.
Yeah.
This one doesn't.
Yeah. All right. I think we can leave it at that. This film for Tony Macklin doesn't work. And I think for me, Tree of Life doesn't quite work. I still think it's worth seeing if you like Malick or if you're interested in daring films.
Take a lot of popcorn.
There you go. All right.
And a little vodka. If
my thanks to Tony Macklin for joining me this week. And for Las Vegas Weekly, I'm Josh Bell.
Josh Bell hates everything.
That's right, including your movie.
Josh Bell hates everything.
Except me.